The following podcast contains explicit language and content that may not be suitable for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the Get Spooky Podcast, where two married guys share stories of paranormal encounters, urban legends, true crime, and other scary things from around the world. I'm Andres.
And I'm Kevin.
And we hope you all had a good Christmas and a good happy New Year's.
Yeah.
A good New Year's.
Yes.
Happy Christmas.
Thank you.
So what's going on?
Out here, 2023.
This year is gearing up to be not as good.
They usually aren't.
No. Yeah. No.
Do you have a New Year's resolution?
I gotta get back on track. Back on track in fitness is what I mean.
Okay.
Let me be clear. I have to get back on it.
Okay.
Your cousin's wedding's coming up in a year, so I have to be ready.
In a year.
I have to be ready for that wedding in a year.
Yeah.
Instead of eating 4 enchiladas, I'm gonna eat 3.
3. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Wow.
I get it.
I'm a pillar of fitness.
A caloric deficit.
You know, I like, speaking of that though, like, I like how many creators are coming out with different articles or like books or just videos on YouTube and TikTok and media like that, that talk about like how to eat like your cultural food, because everybody's been convinced that like if it's not a bland piece of chicken with no seasoning on it and broccoli, it's not healthy. But it's like that couldn't be further from the truth.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I don't really pay attention to like health stuff. So I haven't been made aware, but I mean, that's true. Like low carb doesn't necessarily mean a piece of chicken and broccoli.
Yeah. Or it's like you can have a couple tortillas. Like what is unhealthy about like a diet, you know, like that a Mexican person eats? If you have like your beans, your portion of rice, your portion of meat, your veggies and your tortilla, you're good, you know? Like, that's just as healthy as anything else.
Yeah, and we have a lot of people in our personal lives that have gone to Mexico, even for, like, a few weeks, and have come back and said that they've lost weight.
Yeah.
We were like that in Cancun.
Yeah, we walked a lot, though.
That's true.
But I'm always going to be in love with the fact that everything is so... Well, when I went to Aguascalientes, everything was so walkable.
Mm-hmm.
Where my parents are from, Aguascalientes, where we visited in those areas, it's like very walkable, very pedestrian friendly. Everybody's riding bikes. There are cars, but it's like not the main mode of transportation, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It's more for like long distances.
It's honestly usually like U.S. cities that are made to cater towards cars anyway.
Yeah.
You don't really see a lot of cities where they have like a centro. Where you go every weekend.
A little placita.
Yeah, like a plaza or something like that. That have like shops and coffee shops and restaurants and things like that.
El Zócalo.
Yes.
Cute. Also, we just watched The Last of Us, the first episode, last night.
Yeah.
That shit was good.
This episode is like a day late because we were supposed to record the night before, but we're like, do you want to watch this? Like, hell yeah.
It came out at 8. And by the time we finished watching the hour and a half episode, it was 9:30. And I was like, Kevin, realistically, if we record right now, we're going to go to bed at 12:30.
Yeah.
And he was like, it's going to be Monday tomorrow, so let's just go to bed. So we went to bed. Sorry, primos and primas. We didn't mean to for this episode to be late, but we decided to watch The Last of Us instead. And it was good.
Yeah, we definitely recommend it. If you guys have, if anyone has like HBO Max, even if you haven't seen or like played the video game. So The Last of Us is based on a video game. But it's like a zombie apocalypse type of game.
Yeah.
But the storyline is really good. And it's the type of show that did it well and was very...
true to the source material?
Yeah, true to the source material where you don't have to play the game to enjoy...
the show.
The show.
It was well casted, well written. Well
casted, yep.
Well, the first episode.
Yeah, so far, yes. But, I mean, so far, I think it's really good. And,
oh, what else? We watched Megan a couple weeks ago.
Sorry, I was going to say, it has a lot of backstory. The reason why it's so good without needing the video game is because it has extra backstory that wasn't ever really included in the video game.
It was implied.
Yeah, so it tries to fill in the gaps. But yeah, we watched Megan. How'd you feel?
I loved it.
Of course you did.
Yes. I mean, I like Malignant, so obviously I like Megan.
You like corny shit?
Camp.
Camp. Okay.
Camp. It was cute.
I didn't think it was bad. Who were we talking about with this? Oh, at work. I was talking about it at work. I said, it's not a bad movie, but it's not a good movie either. It's okay. It's definitely a movie. It's...
what were you expecting?
Exactly. And it was very much like a modern interpretation of Chucky. Like, yeah. Child's Play.
Mm-hmm.
But I think
it was... carelessness, childhood trauma.
It was very... yeah.
Loss, like grief.
Child's Play for a modern audience. It wasn't... what am I trying to say? It was a lot of expected stuff. Like... as soon as you start the movie, you kind of know where things are going, which is nice, I guess. Because sometimes it's a movie where you don't really have to think, where you could just sit back and enjoy. And sometimes those movies are good, too.
Mm-hmm.
Not all movies have to be like a fucking puzzle that you have to solve. It's more like...
exactly.
Just enjoy it. And I think it kind of goes back to one day... this is like years ago, I think, or like a year and a half ago. And it's... I'm pretty sure it's on one of these episodes, but we were talking about storytelling. And one thing I never considered that you kind of brought to my attention, you said... oh, it was after we talked about TV shows that go on for too long.
Mm-hmm.
And you said sometimes, especially now, TV show people will write stuff and no one expected ending. They know when to not keep going.
Yeah.
Like, storytelling has changed throughout the years, so... I think Megan is definitely one of those films where it's like you don't need to be thinking. You just kind of just enjoy the movie.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I had a great time watching that movie. Just like when we watched Malignant. I didn't go expecting this like complex horror story of like, am I going to be scared? Like, I genuinely had a good time. Like, I was scared. I was happy. I thought some parts were funny. I thought, like, some parts were so cringy, and I was like, is this bitch really singing Bulletproof to this little girl in that
yeah.
in the middle of a fucking horror movie? And it's, like, it's very subversive. It's very, I don't know, it was fun.
Yeah.
Same thing happened when we watched Malignant. Like, I don't feel like you enjoyed it that much, but I enjoyed it because it was very, like, not done before.
Yeah.
Also, Nope. Nope well, did the same thing. Like, it was, like, very not done before.
Nope was good. See, the thing is, like, maybe I have, an expectation in my mind when I go into see a movie.
You do. That's why I don't feel like you enjoy them.
Disappointed.
Yes. Because
it's not the ending. That's the thing. Like, sometimes I don't want to expect an ending. Or, like, an expected ending, I mean. I mean it more like I want to know what I'm getting myself into. And mm-hmm. I hate surprises. You know I hate surprises.
Mm-hmm.
But like, nope. I mean, spoilers. I'm sorry. If you haven't watched it. But I was expecting an alien.
Mm-hmm.
A UFO.
Mm-hmm.
That first scene where they steal the horse. Oh, someone stole the horse, right? They stole that statue. And then those kids of that ranch.
Oh, yeah.
Show up as like aliens.
Yes. Oof. They're pretending.
oh my god, I was like, yes, where's this going? Yes! And then turns out it was just kids in a costume.
Punch that little kid in the face. Are you
fucking serious?
Yeah. See, I think
the thing is, let's go back and revisit that.
We're desensitized.
Uh-huh.
We're always looking for the scarier movie.
Yeah.
Always looking for that new movie we're going to talk about and, like, say we were genuinely afraid. But the thing is that we have to realize is that I don't think that there's going to be a movie like that anymore, unfortunately. We are both very desensitized. We research the paranormal all the time. We're always reading, like, true crime. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be hard for us to find a new high, quote-unquote.
No, I think I can find it. I think I know what it is.
It's
alien movies.
It's every time we, like, see a movie, it's like, oh, this is the scariest movie. If you watch this movie, like, it chants, like, The Chant when we watched it. It was good. Was it as scary as it was hyped? The Chant. No, I'm thinking about the game.
Oh.
The video game. Okay. Yeah. But it was that movie where they, like, do the chant and they do the hand symbols. And, like, that lady is haunted and so is her daughter.
Oh, God.
Incantation?
We talked about this before.
Yeah.
Disenchanted?
Enchanted? Yeah, we're mentioning it again. But it's like, I'm not expecting a scary movie anymore. I'm just expecting something that I can enjoy. And see, I feel like
that to me was both. That movie was good because it was scary and I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But one thing that I know I will get, like, guaranteed to scare me is alien movies. Like Alien, like that scene in Nope when I was expecting, like, a fucking alien movie. I'm like, oh my god, this is good.
And it wasn't.
But also, maybe it's like a specific type of scary movie, because I'm also thinking back to that one movie on Hulu that's based off of Black Eyed Children. That movie was good.
Which one was that?
It's the one where the father and the daughter go out into, like, a trail, like, with a trailer out into a desert.
The desert? Okay, yeah.
And there's, like, two creatures, like, pretending to be little kids that try to break in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm sorry, this derailed, but oh, Megan outsold Avatar Way of Water.
Wow. The gays really came out.
They really did. They said,
camp. Give it to me.
Yeah.
Give it to me now.
The power that the gays have.
Well, I had fun. That little dance sequence that we've been watching for months in preparation for this movie did not let me down.
It did not disappoint.
It did not let me down. That part where, like, she gets fucking mauled by the dog and she's just like looking at the little girl with her fucked up ass hair. And I'm like, me when I wake up.
Okay, Bob. Okay, Bob.
It was so good. It was literally so good.
We were all just yelling, like, oh, girl, you better work. Like, get her, Jade. Get her. No, I'm just
kidding. Katrina.
Katrina.
Oh, no. But we had fun. It was good. It was fun. We were supposed to watch The Whale, but we ended up not watching it. I also heard that that one is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Brendan Fraser did not go to the Golden Globes or whatever award show that was because he said he's not a hypocrite.
Damn. I don't know what's going on. I'm sorry.
No, well, he got mistreated by Hollywood for a long time. I think he was, like, part of the Me Too movement. Like, someone did something to him inappropriately.
And they blacklisted him.
Yes. And when he didn't want to, they blacklisted him. Yep. That's why he hasn't been in movies in such a long time. And that's, like, recently in the last year. That's why he was so shook when everybody was like, bring Brendan Fraser back. And he got, like, super emotional. And he was like, I didn't know anybody liked me still. And we're like, you were the fucking mummy. You're the guy from The Mummy. He was
the
guy from
The Mummy.
I was a kid watching those movies. Those movies are great. The
Mummy was a fucking bisexual awakening to me.
George of the Jungle, another one.
No.
Yes.
I mean, it was good.
That Man in the Loincloth, I'm sorry. I was a little older than you.
Maybe that's what it was. I was like, put The Mummy back one. I'm trying to... I'm trying to see that. I'm trying to see The Mummy.
No, that series was good too.
Yeah. Okay.
What else is happening? What else? Before we get into the story.
Well, New Year's Eve. I mean, I was just talking about New Year's resolutions.
What's your New Year's resolution?
I don't really have one. Mm. That's it. Be more in my villain era, I guess.
We could all do with being in some villain era goblin.
Yep.
Power S.
goblin mode.
Yeah.
Yup. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like within the past few months, I've changed to be...
What you wish you were this whole time.
Yes. And I feel like I...
Standing up for yourself.
Standing up for myself. That's definitely... That's what I consider my villain era, because...
Boundaries. Setting boundaries.
Yeah, I set boundaries. I feel like because I was considered like the funny person sometimes, I feel like sometimes people didn't respect me because of it. And now that I'm like setting boundaries, people are kind of
surprised
about it. Yeah. But I just say, I'm just a bit of my villain era.
Like, yeah. Because, I mean, there are people that like, que se llevan, right? Like, you're having a good time, but, like, there's a point where, like, where you're making fun of things and you're like, that's a little too far.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a thin line to being...
Yeah. Like
roasting to being disrespectful.
Yeah. Or, like, laughing with someone and then laughing at them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very fine line, but it does happen.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, we should finish talking because our tía or prima, whoever messaged us on Instagram, is going to get mad that we're chit-chatting too much. So let's move into the story.
Okay,
who's going first? You?
I start.
Okay.
This year.
So,
or this month, I'm sorry.
Supposedly, I'd heard that you're doing a two-parter. Is that true?
It is.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, you really are in your villain era. Making us wait a whole episode to hear the conclusion of your story. Wow, villain.
So, this is the Goat Man.
Wow.
Heard of it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've talked about it.
So this was actually inspired by a link to a story that one of our listeners, Alondra, a listener of the pod, sent to us on Instagram.
Thanks, Alondra.
Initially, I was like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And because that's usually how I start. I'm like, what story am I fucking doing? Like, what case am I doing? But Alondra came through. So thank you so much for the inspiration. I don't think that was her intention. But this was actually in response to... I want to say episode 18 when we were talking about the movie Headcount.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of in line with that.
Well, they're very similar. Goatman, the Fleshgate,
mm-hmm.
and Skinwalkers. They're very like thought of to be almost the same
mm-hmm.
in some situations. So I had mentioned it previously in episode 18 as well.
Oh, okay. So my sources are, it's a lot of them. So All That's Interesting article by Austin Harvey. Only in Your State article by Sarah McCosham. Washingtonian article by Matt Blitz. Louisville Halloween article. Creepypasta Wiki. Cult Nation article by Mark Lasky. We Denton Do It article. The Dallas Morning News article by Charles Scooter. Sorry. YouTube video by BuzzFeed Unsolved Network. Our Louisville subreddit. Paranormal Wiki page and Wikipedia. So I do want to mention a content warning. There is lynching, assault, death, decapitation, animal abuse, and mentions of suicide. So let's get into it.
Get into it.
So for generations, there have been tales of half-human, half-animal creatures living in the wooded areas around the world, specifically half-human, half-goat creatures. The Goatman has been described as large, hooved, horned, and hairy.
Ooh.
I knew you were going to fucking say something.
He's got a number?
Does he have a number? Some witnesses claim it can shapeshift. Others claim it wields a large axe.
He got a number?
Shut the fuck up. It's a large axe, huh?
Yeah.
It's bipedal, and for clarification, the top half is human and the bottom half is a goat.
Oh, no. I don't want his number.
Okay. So, I'm just going to go through different goatmen. Goatmen?
Plural.
Goatmen? Goatmen? Okay, I'm just going to say different goatmen from across the U.S. Because it seems like this is a U.S.-based cryptid, I guess.
Really?
Yeah. So, the first
thing is... I don't think so.
Why?
Because in Mexico, if somebody saw the goatman, they would say it's El Diablo. So people in other cultures could very well be seeing Goatman, but they just describe it as the devil. They describe it as
something else.
Yep.
Okay. Well, maybe that is something that I will mention.
Literally meant
in like, episode two.
You know what? Part two. You know what the description of that reminds me of?
Hmm.
Of that girl that went to the dance and she was dancing with that man and he was spinning and spinning faster.
Oh my God.
And then his boot flew off and he had like a hoof.
Okay, spoilers. Hold on. Maybe we can save it for part two.
Don't tell me that story is going to be in your maybe. Story. Oh, my God. You never know.
Maybe you gave me an inspiration, okay. An idea.
Okay.
So, the goat man of Prince George's County, Maryland. So, this creature was reported around 1957 when some people came to have seen a hairy monster near Forestville and Upper Marlboro, Maryland.
Me shirtless.
What the fuck are you talking about? Details are not exact, but legend says that a young couple drove out to a secluded road that the young teens at the time called Lover's Lane. And I think there's different variations to mm-hmm. stuff like that. Like, supposedly that one guy that with a gas mask that killed the couple. So, this is like a common trope in a lot of urban legends.
Right.
Like, the young couple that drove out to a secluded area.
It sounds like, what's the other one? The town who never slept in Texarkana? That sounds like
that's
that.
That's what I'm talking
about.
It
sounds like, yeah.
So they park their car, turn off the lights, and put their attentions towards each other for a bit. Without warning, a giant hairy creature runs out of the woods and begins beating the car. The couple is able to start the engine and drive away. The legend grew even more in the 1960s when there were sporadic sightings of the creature in the area, one of them being a young couple being romantically involved off the side of the road, witnessing what the woman described as a, and this is a quote, a tall, ragged animal with human-like features staring at them from the edge of the woods. In April of 1971, a farmer witnessed a large man-like creature eating the remains of a pig near Fletchertown Road. When he approached the creature, it fled. That was in April. So later that year, on the 27th of October, an article in the most popular legends, about the most popular legends by Karen Hostler is published in Maryland's Prince George's County News, mentioning this goat man monster that supposedly haunts the woods around Fletchertown Road. That's all the article really mentions. It just mentions legends, but it never alleges that the legends were real. Until 2 weeks later, a 16-year-old girl named April Edwards, her dog goes missing, but is found several days later near Fletchertown Road, decapitated.
Oof. So, that's going to be a common trope today, I feel like.
Oh my God. What case are you doing?
Keep going. Okay. You'll hear it.
So, now the legend of the Goatman has piqued the public interest. So, Karen Hostler, she follows up with a new article claiming that on the night the dog went missing, April Edwards, among many other locals, reported sightings of a, quote, animal-like creature that walked on its hind legs, just walking near Fletchertown Road. Its deep, bellowing scream was also heard around for several nights thereafter. So, the following month, on the 30th of November, 1971, the Washington Post published an article about the Goatman, gaining national attention. So this is, like, national now.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the 1970s, there were countless reports in the area of the Goatman attacking cars and killing pets that were left outside. In 1994, during an interview with Mark Opsasnik for Strange Magazine, April Edwards said, and quote, "People came here and called it folklore, and the papers made us out to be ignorant hillbillies who didn't know any better. But what I saw was real, and I know I'm not crazy. Whatever it was, I believed it killed my dog." So it kind of brought a lot of tourism, but I guess in that it also brought this negative attention, making it seem like it was kind of a joke, whereas she very much believed it, and a lot of locals also believed it. That's like, I know what we saw,
right? It made like the locals seem like ignorant.
Yes.
Also, I wonder if there's a Goatman statue, like the Mothman statue. So he got a booty
cheeked up, he got that wagon. In 2000, a team of construction workers claimed to have come face-to-face with what they described a, quote, 300-pound, 7-foot-tall furry creature that had the legs, hooves, and horns of a goat, but the upper body of a man, near Bowie, Maryland. Besides Fletchertown Road, there are three other areas in Prince George's County that have higher-than-average reported sightings of the Goatman, that being a forest behind the St. Mark the Evangelist Middle School in Hyattsville, beneath a Governor's Bridge, also known as Crybaby Bridge, in Bowie, and in College Park. For Crybaby Bridge, the legend says that if you park and shut off your car beneath the bridge, once the sun sets, you can hear the sound of a baby crying or a goat bleeding. Bleeding?
Bleating, yes.
Bleating, okay.
You said it right. It sounds like bleeding, but it's not
oh.
Bleeding. Like blood. It's bleating, like
B-L-E-A-T. Yeah. Bleat. If you hear the sound of a goat, the goat man will appear, jump on your car, attempt to drag you out of your seat, and drag you into the forest. Supposedly, legend says. So, the next one is the Pope Lick Monster. Heard of it?
No. Does he lick popes?
He does not.
Oh, disappointing.
So just outside of Louisville, Kentucky, in Jefferson County, a railroad runs on trestles through the 4,000 acres that make up the parklands of Floyd's Fork Public Park. A trestle, because I didn't know, is a framework used to support a flat surface. So in this case, it's supporting an elevated railroad about 772 feet long and 90 feet off the ground. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Like a bridge?
Yeah, yeah. Like they have them in like westerns.
Like an elevated road?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what the fuck those were called. I didn't know it had a name. But it's kind of like the ones in like Harry Potter when they're going to Hogwarts on the train.
Mm-hmm.
And they pass by those elevated tracks. That's a trestle. So this railroad is actually active, so it is closed off, but people still somehow manage to climb on top of it. As a general public announcement, please do not climb on these, even if you think they are not active. If a train comes at you while you're on here, you literally have nowhere to go. Just a heads up. So if you guys are in the area, don't even bother going up there because it is active. So the forest surrounding this area is said to be where a large part goat, part man, part sheep creature lives. A local legend explaining the origin of Goatman is as follows. I cut out a lot. And I made it more simpler, I guess. So there was a man, and this is according to the legend, there was a man named Colonel Beauregard Shieldnecht, who owned a circus. One night while making a stop near a small town in Maryland, the circus workers found a small baby abandoned on the side of the road with small stubs protruding from its forehead and misshapen legs that looked to be cloven hooves. Colonel Shieldnecht believed he had struck gold as finding his new quote-unquote freak show attraction. He kept the baby locked up for years and treated him worse than an animal. As the baby grew, the small stubs on his forehead eventually grew into horns, and his imprisonment made him resentful and violent. One night during a terrible thunderstorm, the circus train was passing near Louisville when a bolt of lightning struck the tracks and caused the train to derail. Not much is known of what happened after that, but although the train wreck may have killed most of the circus crew instantly, the legend says that the many body parts were found ripped apart and as far away as 2 miles from the crash site, with the Goatman and Colonel Shieldnecht being the only two unaccounted for.
Ooh.
So named after Kentucky's Pope Lick Creek that runs under the elevated railroad, the Pope Lick Goatman is said to have the ability to hypnotize people and the ability to mimic voices. This creature has been blamed for the unexplained livestock mutilations in the area. And supposedly, this creature lures victims to the top of the elevated railroad where they just stop there and wait for the train to hit them, completely powerless to move, while others say that the sheer sight of the creature causes people to jump from the platform to their deaths.
Wow.
There actually have been several documented deaths and severe injuries on and near the train trestle by those looking for this monster. In the year 2000, 19-year-old Nicholas Jewell fell to his death after encountering a train coming towards him while walking on the train tracks. One of the most recent deaths associated with this is that of 26-year-old Roquel Bain, who went looking for this monster with her boyfriend on the 23rd of April of 2016. She was struck by a train and died instantly, while her boyfriend survived by hanging to the side of the trestle. Also on the 26th of May in 2019, 15-year-old Savannah Bright was killed when a train struck her and her friend as they were walking on the train tracks. Her friend survived but was badly injured.
That's so sad.
Yeah. There is a road that runs under the trestle where people claim to have seen the goat man, and some have even said that it chases after the car at 60 miles per hour. So this to me was honestly scary. The idea of this creature being able to hypnotize people and mimic voices.
Mm-hmm.
That to me was scary. So next is...
That's why you say in Appalachia not to follow the voices.
No, wait. That's a thing?
Mm-hmm. We should do an episode on Appalachia, actually.
Hold on. Hold on. Write that down. So, Lake Worth Monster is the next one. Shout out to Texas.
Texas.
On the 9th of July, 1969, a group of three couples were parked by a clearing near Greer Island in Fort Worth, Texas, around midnight. A large creature suddenly jumped on top of the car from the trees above. The creature tried to grab one of the women in the car, but the driver was able to speed off, knocking the creature off the car.
Wow.
According to police, there had been several reports for the past few weeks of sightings of this large unknown creature near the Lake Worth area. What made this case different was that it left visible evidence in the form of an 18-inch gash on the side of the car. This story immediately made the news that same night, and by the next day, dozens of people showed up eager to hunt the creature or just to see it. The next night, and the 10th of July, 1969, dozens of people were out near the clearing where the creature was last spotted. Supposedly, it appeared again in a nearby cliff where it threw a tire almost 500 feet towards the crowd of people as they ran in fear.
Damn.
And this was like a crowd of people that saw it. It was described as being a half-man, half-goat creature with fur and scales. There have been sporadic sightings of this creature since its first sighting in 1969, and according to witnesses, it can climb trees, swim, and is about 7 feet tall and has unnatural strength. Some have reported seeing horns on the creature's head. So along with the bleeding sounds heard at night near this area, it was given the name of the Lakewood Monster or the Lake Worth Goatman. The creature was photographed by Alan Plaster, who described the creature in the photo as a white fur ball that he took while driving past the area in 1969. According to Alan, the creature looked as if it wanted to be seen, making him believe that it was a prank carried out by high school students. And I do want to mention that in 2005 and in 2009, two anonymous men came forward and said one was responsible for scaring people at Lake Worth in 1969, while the other mentioned that he was the one that threw the tire at the crowd of people. However, that doesn't explain the creature that jumped on top of the couple's car and left that large gash in the car in 1969. And to this day, sightings are still reported.
What the fuck?
So next is Goatman's Bridge. So the way I started these cases were, I started with, to me, the most believable, to the not so believable, and to the not even less believable. But this one is a little more paranormal. So this is Goatman's Bridge. Sorry, just a bit of history. In the mid-1800s, Alton, Texas was a small town that served as the seat of Denton County. In November of 1850, it was decided that the county seat would be moved to Denton, a small town just across Hickory Creek. So there were towns that were just literally separated by a creek. By the end of the 1850s, many families had already moved out of Alton. In 1884, a bridge named the Old Alton Bridge was constructed to connect the towns of Denton and Alton. So this bridge and the woods surrounding it is said to be where a demonic entity named the Goatman lives. The bridge has then been nicknamed the Goatman's Bridge. It's described as being top half man and bottom half goat with, quote, glowing empty eyes and goat-like horns. No one knows why this entity can be found here, but local legend says that countless satanic rituals were performed in the woods and on the bridge itself. Records of these rituals actually happening in the area are well documented. Another local legend explaining the presence of Goatman says that of a successful black goat farmer named Oscar Washburn. So again, I want to mention that there is a trigger warning and a content warning for assault and murder. He supposedly hung a sign on the bridge with the message, "This way to the goat man," written on it, because he was a goat herder. So this infuriated Klansmen, and on the night in August 1938, a lynch mob of Klansmen dragged Oscar out of his home, took him to the bridge, tied a noose around his neck, and flung him over the edge of the bridge. Legend says that when the mob went down to confirm the death, they were shocked to find only the noose. The Klansmen frantically rushed to the Washburn farm and set it on fire and killed his wife and children. Oscar Washburn was never seen again, but supposedly after this death is when reports of sightings of the Goatman started. Another version of the local legend explains the origin of this entity is one dating back to the 1860s. In this version, anti-abolitionists and slavers lynched a mixed-race goat herder named Jack Kendall from a tall tree near where the bridge is located today. They tied the noose around his neck so tightly that it caused him to be decapitated and fall into the mud. The slavers watched as the headless body raised itself from the mud, ripped the head off a nearby goat, and used it to replace his.
What the fuck?
Regardless of which origin, both say that the goatmen will spirit away those with bloodlines of clansmen or slavers. He is said to appear on the bridge, and if you knock on it 3 times, or if you park your car, turn your car lights on, and honk 3 times. Reports vary as to what it looks like, as some say that witness a ghostly apparition of a man herding goats. Others say that they see a figure of a man with horns and a goat head under each arm, while others say they see a half-man, half-goat monster staring them down from the other side of the bridge. People have reported hearing voices telling them to get off the bridge. One person claims he ran off the bridge after hearing a voice, turning in time to see his friend get pulled and thrown off the bridge. People have reported hearing the sound of hooves following them across, and people have reported being thrown or hit or scratched 3 times, a supposed common occurrence in demonic attacks as a mockery of the Holy Trinity. So sightings of the Goatman have been reported almost in every state in the U.S., from the Pacific Northwest, the Southwestern region, the Great Lakes region, the Deep South, even as far north as Ontario, Canada. There have been reportings of a bipedal half-man, half-goat creature in these areas. So for the next Goatman? Yeah. We'll be leaving the U.S., but we'll discuss that in next month's episode.
Ooh, it just got interesting.
Sorry. I do want to mention this precaution because I really liked it. It was part of the precaution section of the Paranormal Wiki page on Goatman. And I quoted it because it was so good. If you believe that you're being observed by a Goatman, do not get separated from your group and try to refrain from talking, or at least discussing personal information. The more it knows, the better it can replace a member of the group. A head count is a good way to determine if a Goatman has infiltrated a group. While no Goatman deaths have ever been reported, being shot at causes it pain which may make it leave, giving enough time to return to safety. Goatmen are believed to be able to influence perception, so don't give up on safety precautions or escape until you are either indoors or out of the wilderness. And that is my case of part one of Goatman.
Wow, that was good.
Thank you.
You know what it almost makes me think of, like that last sentence that you said? Uh-huh. That grave encounters, when they, like, leave the hospital and they're like, oh, yeah, we got out. Yes. And they're at the hotel.
Yes.
And then they get in the elevator, and then when it goes to the floor that they want and opens, it's the fucking hospital again. Yep. And they can't go back to the hotel. They've been in the hospital the whole
time. That, to me, is the fucking scariest, where you feel like yes, I'm finally out of the danger, I'm safe, and then something happens where it's like, oh shit, hold on,
it messes with your perception.
Yes. And that's why I thought this Goatman creature was so interesting and, like, really fascinating, with how it mimics people's voices. It can hypnotize people. It literally changes reality. It fucking changes form and shape shifts. That, to me, was fucking scary.
Wow.
And I kind of want to pique everyone's interest of the creepypasta case that Alondra sent me, because there's a lot of that in there. But I'll leave that till the month of February.
Okay. So what do we got for the palate cleanser? What are we doing?
For Christmas, we watched A Christmas Story for the first time.
Can I just say...
Go ahead. I know you want to say
something. Why do people hype the fuck out of that movie? And it is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. People make a reference to that fucking leg lamp. It's like everywhere during Christmas time. And then I watched the movie and I'm like, this movie was bad. This movie was annoying.
Yeah, to me, I feel like it's more of a nostalgia factor. Like, if you notice, a lot of people that like it now are like, oh, it's a classic, it's because they grew up watching it. And it was, that's understandable.
The thing is it was bad then and it's bad now. Like,
well, not necessarily. I mean,
it's bad.
If, well, yes, I, but to them it's not. And that's what I'm saying. Like, if you grew up watching a movie and you're like, oh my God, I fucking love that movie. Even if it's fucking terrible, to you, it's great. So to me, I was like, I don't get it.
I have a movie like that.
What is it?
Sucker Punch. So good.
That movie is trash.
So it's, that movie was so that movie was ahead of its time. It was doing something else that nobody knew. Like,
yeah,
and then small-minded people didn't like it. Small mind.
Okay, what's you the have sequel? A small mind. What's the sequel?
It was so good. It only needed one.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Emily Browning killed in that movie.
All right. All right.
Anyways, that movie was bad. Like, it was fine or whatever, but it was like, why is this a Christmas movie?
Exactly. I didn't really understand. Like, I understand that he wanted a gun, but it's like, even that, that's weird. Like, that little child wants a gun? Hello? It's a different time. I don't know.
I don't know. And it just made me uncomfortable with, like, the appliances that were in the house, the cars everybody was driving around. I'm like, ew, the 40s in the United States was ugly.
That's the 40s everywhere. That was when mass manufacturing started. What?
Gross.
Especially for World War II.
We would have got lynched if we lived back there.
What the fuck? Okay, you could have just said you didn't like it. All right. Okay, thank you.
Is this the America people want it to be again?
The reason I know that that's how it was literally across the world is because remember like a few years ago when Cuba finally opened for like foreigners? That's all the cars that they had. Because they weren't accepting imports from other countries. So they literally had the cars from the 40s. Like, they still have cars from the 40s there.
They're cute.
You just said they were ugly.
In America.
Oh, okay.
That's the difference.
Okay, well.
Maybe I just don't like this country.
Maybe that's what I'm getting at. Okay. That's what I'm picking up. As for back in the line of, like, Christmas stuff... there was a TikTok of it's like were you normal or did you perform little dances with your cousins during Christmas? And it reminded me of one time when I forgot what Christmas it was, but we were very young, me and my cousins, and we practiced, quote unquote, we practiced a dance to Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and then like another Christmas song for Christmas. And I remember it was so funny. Like, it's funny looking back at it now because I remember we're all like little kids, so it's like the house was fucking full of people. And when we're here, like with our missing teeth, we're like, everybody, please pay attention. Please pay attention to us. And nobody paid attention. But we started playing the little Twinkle Twinkle song and we did a little dance and nobody fucking cared. Nobody.
Everybody was talking. Attention. Everybody was just having their conversation and you're over there like.
Well, I'm fighting for my fucking life with that Twinkle Twinkle Little Star song, man. Everyone not even paying attention.
Wow.
But it's so funny how it's like, I'm glad me and my cousins were the only people that did that. Did you ever do that?
Yes, absolutely.
What did you dance to?
Sapito by Cómplices al Rescate.
What the fuck?
Also, we danced to Bomba.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. We danced to also, that one too.
Which one was the other one? The one that's like, yo quiero volver a verte beber something cerca de mí. Y mis ojos lloran por ti. You know which one.
Is it Mis Ojos Lloran Por Ti?
Yes, okay. That one. Yeah. Who didn't have a choreography to that song?
I didn't.
Also, another song by Amanda Perez. The Gassimi Angel.
Oh, that's a good one. We were doing
yes. The little hand. Yep. The little hand bird coming off of our chest.
We're little angels. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy. How did we never talk about
this? We've lived the same childhood.
I was there.
You were there. It was good practice for getting us to quinceañera age. Because really? Then we all got to our early teens and then everybody wanted us to be on their quinceañeras because we all knew how to dance.
Okay. See, I was never invited to a quinceañera. Wow.
Then I got to the age of, what was it, 15, 16? And I was like, nobody asked me to be in their quinceañeras anymore. This is exhausting.
They're like old.
It would like take my time. They were like... We're going to have practice 3 times a week for 2 hours. And I'm like, I'm out here for free. I could be working.
Like, I don't even like you guys that much. True.
Then I had a job. So I'd rather be making money than be dancing at a quinceañera.
Okay, next topic, and I hope it's not a loaded question. Did you ever have someone to look up to as a child?
The Power Rangers.
All right. Okay. Maybe I should have set that up a little differently. I was looking back at, like, it was literally like 3 days ago or something, but I was looking back at like childhood role models. And it's like, we don't really have brown skinned Mexican or Hispanic role models.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the closest thing we have today is like Bad Bunny, because he is a national treasure and because he's an international icon. But the thing about him is that Bad Bunny does not do music in English because he doesn't want to cater to like an American audience.
Mm-hmm.
And he's mentioned before, any music that he makes for Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, do you know of any other artists, especially us, like when we were kids, like, did you know any artists or any public figure that was like Hispanic, dark skinned?
No, can't think of any.
See, I couldn't either, but I was like, I know there's someone out there, so I was just waiting for today to ask you about it.
Nope.
That's crazy.
Nope.
That's fucking crazy. I think everyone kind of has, like, especially, like, white Americans, they always have, like, that figure to look up to, and it's, like, who they want to look like and
Cameron
stuff.
Diaz. They all wanted to look like Cameron Diaz.
Sure. Sure. I meant more like...
Ben Stiller.
I meant... Okay. I meant more like, especially today, like, a lot of superheroes, Andrew Garfield, what's that one little boy?
Tom Holland,
yeah. I'm glad you knew. But there's not really, like, brown actors, Republic figures that look like us or that represent us. And if they do, they don't really get major roles in, like, TV movies and stuff like that.
You know, I will say that there are a lot of cartoons with people of color.
Like what?
The Owl House.
Okay.
The little girl, I think, like, the little girl in the Owl House is Guatemalan. Her name's Luz.
Oh.
Yeah. That one's good. There's also Star versus the Evil in the Universe or something like that. The little boy that's on the show with her is Mexican.
Are these, like, publicly known TV shows?
Yes, we are not children.
I don't know what kids watch.
Yes, but children watch those
children
shows.
Children watch them. Okay. Yes. That's good. As animated mediums are good.
They have that one princess, that Disney princess in Spanish. Something Elena of Avalon or something like that. She's Mexican. Or she's okay. Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think it's happening more in cartoons and not so much in, like, real life.
Yeah. Interesting.
Like live action.
Really, the only actors that I can possibly think of is like anyone in Star Wars or anyone in Marvel and stuff like that. Pablo Pascal from...
He's light skinned.
I guess. Oscar Isaac.
Okay. He's hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think there is a change, but it's not progressing as fast as I thought, I guess.
Gael García Bernal.
And although, like, people argue and say, like, Bad Bunny makes music that is not for kids, obviously. But kids like his music. Whether or not it's made for children is no bearing on whether children will like it.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of that TikTok that was going around. It was like a DJ at, like, an elementary school when they're like, play Bad Bunny.
And then all, like, of them started dancing.
She's like, no, I'm going to get in trouble. But she played it anyway, but they all knew the words.
Yeah. All the kids, the Asian kids, the Hispanic kids, the white kids.
Yep.
All the kids knew
all of them knew the song. Even if you don't know the song, it gets you fucking hyped. I showed my coworker today. She's Vietnamese. I showed her a Bad Bunny song. And she was like, it's kind of good. I kind of like it. And I'm like, oh my God.
You're Puerto Rican now.
She's Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
Latina.
That girl that took my blood pressure and drew my blood the other day at the doctor's office. She had a Bad Bunny badge reel, the little heart with the eye on it. And I didn't notice until she left, she had the heart and the eye on the back of her arm, too.
Like a tattoo?
A tattoo, yes.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, she was dedicated.
Me.
She was cool. Oh, she's like, I was like, oh, you like, do you like Bad Bunny? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, cool, me too. And then, obviously, like, the conversation took off after that. So.
You should have said, do you like Bad Bunny? And she said, yes, throw her phone.
Oh, yeah.
I was just kidding.
No, she didn't have her phone with her. She was on the clock.
To those that don't know, recently Bad Bunny was caught on video of someone, like a fan, what was it, that approached him recording him?
Yeah.
And he got frustrated and grabbed the phone and fucking chucked it. And, I mean, the internet's divided. Like, yeah. Was he right or was he wrong?
He wasn't right, but at the same time...
He wasn't wrong. Yeah.
Honestly, like, working 40 hours a week or all that overtime, like, I get fucking tired of my job. I get tired of being at my job.
Yep.
And the thing with celebrities is, like, yes, they have a really cool job and make a lot of money, but they can't turn it off. They can't go anywhere without getting recognized. They can't live, like, a normal life.
And they're people, too.
Yes.
Like, they get frustrated, too. Like, I wouldn't like someone running up to me and putting... Their phone in my face. I'd be like, hell no.
But at the same time, it was not nice that he took her property and threw it. I've heard that he went up to her afterwards and apologized and bought her a new phone. Mm. I don't know how true that is. I heard. But at the same time, like, she probably had pictures and contacts and things that she can't get back from that phone.
Yeah.
So that's kind of upsetting, but I digress.
The internet is divided, let me tell you. The last topic before we jump into your story, sorry. So this was sent in to us by Brooke, but also by Maria, friend of the pod. Two women are actually suing Gloria Trevi and Sergio Andrade in California for sexual assault allegations from the 90s. And I'm sorry, I forgot who it was, but they messaged us. I may have been Brooke, I'm sorry. But she said, the only reason I know this case is because of your podcast. And I'm like, oh my God. Shit. The crazy thing is that, like, even a lot of Hispanics don't know that this happened. Like, yeah, it was a fucking media storm in the 90s because of this.
I remember.
But it wasn't... I'm not saying you wouldn't remember, but I'm saying, like, a lot of people that are younger than us, they don't know what the fuck happened.
See, the reason why I remember so clearly is because when I became cognizant of what was going on with Gloria Trevi and Sergio Andrade, is when they were claiming that their music backwards was hypnotizing young women.
Oh my God.
And they would play his music, and you know, like, Primer Impacto fucking sensationalized the shit out of that. God. They were like, this is the devil, listen to the song backwards, it's actually saying this. And that shit, when I was a kid, really scared me, obviously. But, like...
You're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to be hypnotized. But, so I remember it, like, vividly. Like, very, like, wow, this is happening. Gloria Trevi's in trouble. She's, like, jumping to different countries so she doesn't get caught.
That's insane.
With that sex cult they had.
I was a baby, but I remember hearing it about it. The only thing, obviously, I was a child, so they weren't going to be, like, a sex cult. But it was more like... Gloria Trevi kept girls in cages, and I was like, oh shit. I was like four. I was like, oh shit. Well, I was like, what the fuck? But yeah, I guess to us, because she was, I think, mostly popular in Mexico. She was considered like Mexican Madonna. So it's like, for someone of that
caliber?
Sure. Sure. That's a good word. For someone of that caliber that, like, she's like a national treasure to find out that she's doing that. Of course the media is going to fucking jump on it. But it's back. And I think the reason that those two women came forward is because California passed a law to extend the statute of limitations.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, if you did not file a court case after the 31st of December of 2022, like, you can still file it, but the statute of limitation would have expired, which to me is so fucked up, because it's like a statute of limitation does not benefit anyone but the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fucking helping the victims. Yeah, just wanted to share that. I haven't really been following a lot of updates, but oh my God.
Update, she's going to jail.
It's just so weird to me.
Honestly,
Sorry.
They both deserve it.
To be honest, I don't know. I understand the idea that she may have been a victim, but it's like she has to at least be partially responsible in something.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know where the court case is going to go.
Like, there are people that are on the fence that they're like, I don't know if this happened. This happened.
Yeah.
They did this. Mm-hmm. There is proof.
There's countless witnesses. There is proof.
She was a part of this. He was a part of it. Like, there's no question. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They were inappropriately touching and keeping women from their freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And people are still, like, not convinced that this really happened. No, this, like, really happened.
Yeah. Well, we'll see where the case goes. So.
Absolutely. We'll
keep y'all updated next month. If there's an update, maybe I'll remember. I don't know.
Maybe she's in jail next month.
Oh, my God.
No, actually, I shouldn't say that. It's not up to me. It's up to the court system.
California. Oh, my God.
It's the state of California. The state of California versus Gloria Trevi.
Oh, my God.
And not a headline I'd ever thought I'd see. Not a court case I'd ever thought I'd see.
Got it.
Well, no, because it wouldn't be the state of California. It's two people that are suing her, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, never mind. Anyways, are we ready to talk about...
I don't know
about
what we're saying anymore, but...
Me neither.
We will keep you all informed if there's an update.
We're in our... I'm 30. It's bedtime.
Oh, my God.
I'm 31. It's bedtime.
All right. Well, go ahead.
Okay. So, my case is about the Nahanni Valley.
Oof.
Are you ready?
I think I suggested this. So, yeah.
You may have.
Well, I think the only reason I suggested this to you is because I wanted to know about it, but I didn't want to do the research.
Okay. Well, I did it for you.
Thank you.
My fount of information, mi fuente de información, my sources... is spectacularwt.com/story5mindblowingwondersNahanni Valley. Also, a video by the Lore Lodge, the Valley of Headless Men. And then an article from ancientorigins.net called Unexplained Phenomena, Nahanni Valley. And also, Mr. Ballin has a really good video too. Okay, so let me read you a little excerpt of the Nahanni Valley Reservation from the website. Nahanni National Park Reserve is a landscape like no other. Tucked into the territory's southwest flank, it is a wilderness paradise sliced by great waters and prickling with peaks. It's a place of great beauty and great intrigue. Its nature on its grandest scale. Here are five places that you won't believe are real. Canada's greatest wilderness waterfall is an easy flight seeing trip from Fort Simpson at Virginia Falls. The South Nahanni River leaps off a 96-meter cliff, bisected by the great mid-river spire of Mason's Rock, creating a gusting spray and shuddering earth. Canyons and hot springs, wildlife and rapids, mountains and waterfalls from its start of the Yukon border to when it joins the Liard River 500 kilometers later. This wild river takes the greatest, most scenic path in the country. Its landscape that seems like a dream, peaks like daggers impaling the sky, thumbing their noses at the law of gravity. This is an alpinist's Shangri-La, with classic climbs like the Lotus Flower Tower, Mount Proboscis, and Middle Huey Spire. Verdon Ferry Meadow, near the base of the Great Granite Towers, is an ideal place to set up a camera or pitch a tent. Rarely seen and almost never trekked, this is a great grassy mesa suspended above scenic wonderland, around the edges of the Plateau River Gorges plunges 800 meters. Dolls, sheep frolic, hoodoos stand on guard at lakes like Glacier, Rabbit Kettle, Hole in the Wall, and Little Doctor. The fishing is good, and the scenery is even better. Potential catches include pickerel, pike, trout, and grayling. So they paint this place to be wonderful.
Uh-huh.
The thing that they don't tell you is that it's not easily accessible. There are no roads that go here.
What the hell? How do you get there?
You have to fly in. You have to walk in, or you have to canoe in from like hundreds of miles away. It is not close. It is above like the, there's a line in Canada. It's like a line of longitude or maybe latitude. I don't remember what it's referenced or what the name of it is, but like everything above that line of latitude is considered like the wilds of Canada. Like, there is no towns, there's no cities, There's no roads. It's like the wilderness, like the open wilderness.
Oh my God.
And this just happens to be in the open wilderness. And then it closes out with saying, for more on the Northwest Territory's most legendary park, check out Nahanni National Park Reserve. Well, this park is associated with an alarming amount of unexplained phenomena. Before it was a national park, explorers often seeking the Nahanni Valley long-rumored gold deposits would simply vanish, and their bodies never recovered at all. Whenever remains were eventually discovered, they were often mutilated, even beheaded, earning Nahanni the infamous nickname the Headless Valley or Valley of the Headless Men.
Oh my God.
Interesting. People fortunate enough to come out alive might still emerge crazy or forever changed. There were some reports of others that kept their sanity but told fantastic tales of animals twice as big as anywhere else or strange monsters like hairy giants, malevolent spirits, and living fossil-like dinosaurs. Woolly mammoths and dire wolves are all inhabiting this mystical land that somehow time forgot. So, like, these animals are widely and still reported to this day to exist there. Woolly mammoths and dire wolves. And they attack people. While modern conveniences have now made Nahanni National Park Reserve safer than it was in the past, similar stories do persist. The park itself is largely uninhabited today, except a few cabins here and there only accessible via a very long hike, a river trip, or flying into Glacier Lake, like I said. The Nahanni River Valley was first inhabited around 800 BC by several groups that came in successive waves. We have evidence of human habitation all along the 11,000 square miles that make up the park. The native population that first inhabited this area is thought to be and known as today as the Diné. They're also known as Navajo, Apache, and the Athabascan people by people in Canada. Mm-hmm. Or how they're called First Nations people in Canada. That's what they prefer to be called. The huge group of native people seem to have migrated out of the area around 1300 to 1400 BC, moving south into the Americas. The Nahanni River Valley is dominated by the North and South Nahanni River, as well as their various offshoots. There's rivers literally everywhere in the Nahanni. They come from these two big rivers, the North and South, and they kind of like the smaller offshoots just branch out everywhere. It looks like veins when you're looking at a map of the Nahanni Valley. It just goes everywhere. These rivers spring from Mount Christie, which is part of the Mackenzie Mountain Range. Like many places in the United States and Canada, the Nahanni River Valley takes its name from a local Native American tribe, in this case the Naha tribe, but it's a little bit more complicated than it seems. The Naha tribe haven't been there since technically 300 BC. Local oral historians, as well as local Native people of the region, tell of a vicious tribe of raiders that lived way up in the mountains. A lot of the details around this are kind of foggy and lost to time, because we're talking about things that were oral tradition and not necessarily written down at the time. Mm-hmm. But according to Park Canada's website, the story here goes that the other tribes of the region got sick of dealing with the Naha because they're coming into their villages, they were attacking their people, they were killing their people, they were stealing their resources, they were stealing the women, they were murdering children, they were thought to be cannibals. Mm-hmm. And we'll kind of get into it in a little bit. They were almost like paranormal. A little, like, there was something off about them. But anyways, so they kind of all these native populations that lived around the Naha gathered into a large unit and marched up into the mountains looking for them. They planned to exterminate them once and for all. They got there, took a look, figured out where they were, or where the settlement was, and waited until nightfall. So they kind of hid until it was, like, nighttime so they could all attack them. Upon approaching, they discovered something really strange. All the sleeping, like, rolls or, like, their sleeping bags, like, what back then would be called a sleeping bag, the thing that they slept on, were all rolled out. There was fires. There was small huts and stuff, like, around. But there was nobody there. No one. They were completely gone. And that was the last time anyone saw the Naha in that region. They just disappeared.
Oh, my God. All of them?
All of them. All of the Naha was gone. And so what kind of coincides with this at the same time is that we know that in the distant past, or in the past, a group of First Nations or Native American people arrived to the American Southwest around the same time several years later, but still around the same era. So it's kind of extrapolated, and many scholars believe that it's actually the Navajo people that were the Naha that came down from the mountains because they knew that these people were coming after them, and they moved into the Americas.
Okay.
So, and this is like really weird. Like, there's, it's, some people say that this is the Naha. Other people say that no, like the Naha were actually like a completely different ethnic group from the Diné and the Apache, because they're saying that like the Naha people were like 7 feet tall. Their skin was like pretty much like Kratos from God of War when he killed his family and he had to wear the ashes, like unnaturally white. And they were cannibals and they wore masks when they would attack people. And so a lot of people say like, no, this is, this was not the Diné people. The Diné people were, they moved into the Southwest because of the things that were happening to them in the mountains. Like they left because they were like, these people keep fucking with us. Let's just go. And so they took their stuff and left. So nobody really knows what happened to the Naha, but supposedly they're a completely different ethnic group and they kind of just disappeared.
Oh, shit.
So several hundred years following this, when Europeans reached the area, they started to settle and make trading posts. So they would trade with both European trappers, the hunters. They would go into the wilderness, collect skin and pelts. And eventually they kind of met with these First Nations people. And so they also started trading with the First Nations people. These areas, like these forts and stuff, became such big trading post hubs. That they started to kind of boom. So around the 1900s, reports of significant gold deposits in the Nahanni River Valley started to surface all over Western Canada, especially in places like British Columbia, the Northwest Territories, and the Yukon. And these reports, while at first unfounded, did eventually bring a lot of attention. So the origins of this eerie nickname can be traced to the earliest 20th century at the same time as it was called a Klondike Gold Rush. At this time, many would-be prospectors wanted to test their fortunes and head out to the remote Canadian wilderness, especially Yukon. It was known to contain gold in its rivers and soils, and a treasure could be quickly made by those lucky enough to strike gold. Two of these prospectors decided to ignore the traditional routes and locations leading to the Yukon, and to instead try their luck in the Nahanni Valley. They were two brothers of mestiz ancestry, so they were both native. Willie and Frank McLeod. In 1906, they canoed upriver to reach the Nahanni Valley, and that was the last time anyone saw them alive. So it was Frank McLeod, Willie, and then there was also a third man. His last name was Weir. There's not very good records of like his last name. Mm-hmm. So what ended up happening is the three of them stop at a trading post. They pick up a bunch of supplies. They take off on their canoe up to the Nahanni Valley. And the way that the Nahanni Valley is set up is there's several valleys, and every valley is like different. So when you first pull up into the first valley, there's plenty of like spaces on the sides of the rivers that you can get out and get up on the trees. Like you can get on the trees, get out of the water, like you can camp there. But the thing is that like, in between, like, the reason why it's called the Nahanni Valley, or, like, it's a valley, is because, like, the mountains on the sides of the river are so fucking steep, they go up hundreds of, like, hundreds of feet up in, like, vertical.
Yeah.
So when you look at it, it literally looks like just, like, a U, like, when you're looking at it. So then eventually, when you go so many miles, you get to the next part, which is, like, the second compartment, or, like, the second valley. And in the second valley or third valley, it says that, like, you can't get out of the boat. It's literally, like, cliff, sheer rock face on both sides. That you have to, like, keep going in your canoe for miles and miles and miles till you reach the next valley. And then the next valley, you're able to get out of your boat again because there's, like, land on the sides and there's trees and you're able to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, like, they got to the very northern part of the Nahanni Valley, and that's when they got out. So when they got out, it says that, like, supposedly they found gold. They sent a letter to their brother, and they told their brother, hey, like, we found gold. Like, you need to come up here. You need to help us out. And so the brother kind of, like, was like, wow, well, they're having a good time. You know, like, we'll see them when they get back. So a year went by. They didn't come back. He's like, they're busy. And then another year went by. So it's 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, what is going on? They should have been back by now. So he decided to go look for them. So he bought supplies, made the trek, went through all of the, like, the valleys until he got to the very last valley. And whenever they got into the very last valley, off to the side, they saw a tent, him and his companions. And so when he got out, he noticed that it was two bodies. The two bodies were what he found out to be his brothers, because he looked in their possessions, mm-hmm. and he was like, these are my brothers. First of all, both of them had been burnt to a crisp, like, oh, they were set on fire, and they were decapitated. The one that was outside of the tent was reaching for his rifle that was propped up against a tree. Like, the skull had, like, its hand reaching out, or, like, the skeleton had its hand reaching out to, like, the gun. Mm-hmm. So it looked like it was trying to reach for it. And then his brother, it looks like he didn't even make it out of his tent. They, like, chopped his head off when he was coming out of the tent, and they burned his body in the tent.
Who?
Here's the thing. Nobody knows. A lot of people thought it was Weir, the third man. The third man. Mm-hmm. Once he found his brother's bodies, he went back home. So he didn't know, like, what else had happened. He kind of just collected. He's like, well, I mean, this was a lost cause. Like, my brothers are gone. Went back home. 2 months later, a local native man found Weir a mile up the river from where they were found, also dead, also missing his head, also burnt. So it was not him that killed them to begin with.
Oh, because they thought he may have
they killed thought them that and it taken was,
the money.
They thought that he had stolen all the gold, and made off with it. And basically, they found him also in the same situation that the brothers were in.
And nobody knows. I want
to
know.
To this day, nobody knows. I'm going to just ruin it for you. Nobody knows what's going on in the Nahanni Valley.
I want to know. I'll go. I'll figure it out. I'll be right back.
Moving on. So from here on, the mysteries deepened. Who was decapitating people? Like, they were just, these two prospectors were just out there, like, basically digging for gold. Like, and there's plenty of gold to go around in the Nahanni Valley. If the stories are true, there's gold in the mountains, there's gold in the ground, there's gold in the water. Why do you feel like you need to go kill two people when there's hundreds of miles of, like, river that you can go look for gold in, right? So rumors began spreading, and many wild theories were put forward. Some spoke of feuding prospectors killing one another, others attributed the deaths to wild animals, while some spoke of inhospitable, warlike natives leaving the headless corpses as a warning to other trespassers. Theories floated about until another corpse was discovered in 1917. It was that of a Swiss prospector named Martin Jorgensen. His body was discovered decapitated next to the remains of his cabin. It was burned to the ground. It is supposed that he had struck gold in the vicinity as he wrote of it back home before ending up beheaded. So really what had happened was, is that this guy right here, Martin Jorgensen, heard about the two other brothers from his brother that came back. Like, he told stories of, like, what he had found, and supposedly, like, they had found gold. So he was like, okay, well, I'm going to try my luck. I'm new in this country. Like, let me go try. So he takes a bunch of people, builds a cabin. He's there for, like, years. He's there for a couple of years. So eventually he sends letters back home, and he's like, hey, I need you guys to head up here, like, this summer. Like, I think it was wintertime when he sent the letter, when they finally got the letter. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, I know this is going to take a while to get to you guys, but I actually struck gold. I built a cabin. I have provisions, but I need a group of people to come help me mine. Like, I need a group of people to come help me get this gold out, and then so we can take it back. And he was basically saying, like, we have a cabin, we have a place to stay here, like, you'll be good, just pick up some provisions on the way up here, and here's the kind of directions of where my cabin is. Here you go.
Okay.
So he sends a letter, the guy gets it, I don't remember who the guy was, right? Mm-hmm. He heads up there, and when they get there, and they follow the instructions to find the cabin, they find Martin Jorgensen outside of his cabin, burned and beheaded. And his cabin was burned down too. So, like, not only was he burned, but his cabin was burnt too. Just very weird. Very strange. And there was no traces of anybody else. They looked around in the area to see if they had seen anybody else. Any, like, footprints, any, like, it. And it looked like his body in the cabin had been burned and been there for a while. So it's like, did we get the letter in time? Like, at what? Like, they were trying to put a timeline together and they didn't really know when. And so it kind of just like went unanswered and nobody really figured out what happened to him. But in 1927, another body was discovered in the Nahanni belonging to a man nicknamed Yukon Fisher. He was dubbed an outlaw and a prospector. This man was sought by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police for several years before his death. It was thought that he went here to hide from the Royal Mounted Police because this area was so rugged that it would be really hard for them to get there. Mm-hmm. The officials found his skeletons on the banks of Bennett Creek, quite close to the place where the bodies of the McLeod brothers were found in 1908. His death was never fully explained, nor was the fact that he was known to have possessed a solid number of gold nuggets with which he purchased goods on the frontier. So, it was thought that he had also found gold, because when he went back to the towns to buy provisions, he had raw gold nuggets that he was bringing. Where else was he going to get those gold nuggets in from here? So. Then in 1931, another body was found. This time, it was that of Phil Powers. His charred remains were discovered in the ashes of what was his cabin. The RCMP, or the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, were quick to attribute his death to a faulty stovepipe, but their explanation was repeatedly debunked by various sources. Phil Powers, for what it's worth, was likely murdered and his cabin set ablaze. Many others simply disappeared without a trace in the remote wilderness of the Nahanni Valley. In 1928, one prospector named Angus Hall ventured ahead of his party and was never again seen. Another pair of prospectors, Joe Mulholland and Bill Iper, disappeared in 1936. For many years, they were searched for, but never found. The only things discovered was their cabin burned down to the ground. This is a recurring theme. So about Phil Powers. Mm-hmm. So the thing was, the positioning of Phil's body, the way that his cabin burned down, and like the items that were kind of ruffled around in his house, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police kept saying like, this was like his cabin lit on fire because his stovepipe, it was an old stove that you put wood in. Uh-huh. They were saying that it wasn't positioned correctly and it burned the house. Well, those things didn't add up because it was like the way that he had fallen was not possible for him to have like, it was basically like he died from blunt force trauma before the actual cabin set ablaze is basically what it boiled down to. Mm. Now, let's see. Angus Hall supposedly literally just walked 50 feet away from his like group that he was with and completely fucking disappeared. Never to be seen again. Never found his body.
Not even his remains?
No.
Oh my god.
Now, Joe Mulholland and Bill Iper, they disappeared, but again, their cabin was burned down. So, like, what is going on here? Like, they disappeared, their bodies were never found, and the cabin that they were staying in was burned down. Strange. Now, in 1926, a woman named Annie Laferte.
How do you spell it?
L-A-F-E-R-T-E. Laferte.
L-A-F-E-R-T-E.
Laferte.
I mean, yeah.
A young woman named Annie also went missing in the Nahanni. In 1926, with her hunting party, she was present in the valley near Flat River, but got lost in the wilderness and disappeared. So the story is very, very interesting here. I kind of just want to like step away from like my notes. But supposedly Annie was with a hunting party of like 10 other people and they were having a great time. They were drinking, they were smoking, obviously cigars, not anything else. It was the 30s back then. I don't think they had weed. So
oh, you don't think they invented weed then?
No.
You don't think it was invented then?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
It's a new thing. Anyways, so everything was fine until they went to bed. Mm-hmm. They were saying that she was behaving strangely right before going to bed. Mm-hmm. And so they all went to bed, and the next morning, she was gone.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So Many months later, a First Nations man by the name of Big Charlie claimed to have seen the woman climbing a hill while totally naked, seemingly having lost her mind. She became just another of the many victims of the Wild Nahanni Valley. So the story that he tells is that he was on the other side of the river from the hunting party and he knew they were there. He could hear them partying, he could hear them having a good time, and he could see their fire from where he was, but he was like, it's on the other side of the river, it's kind of far, like they don't know who I am, like I'm not going to go hang out with them, you know? He was kind of like doing his own thing.
Well, it'd be kind of weird to like walk out from the woods into like this little camp area and it's like, hey guys, what's going on?
In the middle of the night?
Yeah.
Yeah, they would have got scared. But anyways, so what he says is that eventually he heard the party ended and everybody went to bed and he didn't. And so he was kind of just hanging out. But he's like, later on that night, he woke up again because he could hear splashing in the river. And when he looked up, he saw a naked woman dancing around in the river, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, what the hell? And he says that something felt very off about her. Something felt off about like what was happening. And so he just kept watching her. And then eventually, like, she started climbing on rocks, like almost vertical rocks. So think about like, do you remember that movie that came out with the old lady in the diner and she's climbing up on the fucking walls because she's like possessed?
Possessed, yeah.
And that lady has that, the Jesus in her belly, basically.
Okay.
What movie was that?
I don't remember the name, but it, like, Legion, I want to say?
Something like that. Okay, so think that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, I know that she felt me looking at her because she looked at me. And the look that she gave me, I knew she was possessed by an evil spirit.
What the fuck?
Yeah, he's like...
So she was a person, like, part of the party.
Yeah, it was Anita. It was Annie. Like, the way that... She was described to him later on, and he's like, yeah, that's exactly the lady that I saw, naked, climbing up rocks.
Oh my god. You could have also described it as the scene in Breaking Dawn after Bella becomes a vampire and climbs up that fucking mountain because she smells like a...
Like blood?
A blood, yeah.
Also, so yeah, like that.
Okay,
like,
that's a good...
Weird paranormal, like, strength climbing up a fucking mountain. But anyways, So, Big Charlie claimed to have seen that woman climbing a hill while totally naked, seemingly having lost her mind. She became just another one of the many victims of the Wild Nahanni Valley. So inhospitable was the Nahanni Valley that even in the 1920s, it was still unexplored. Maps of the region showed almost nothing except two flat lines that indicated the two main rivers, Nahanni and Flat. It would take decades for an accurate map to be created. Of course, over the years, many sources try to discredit the mysteries to the end. Some claim that the original headless corpses of McLeod brothers were not really headless, but in fact were identified by the remnants of the hair on their skulls, but it was actually the brother found the items in their pockets.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is no evidence for either of the theories. Much of this can be attributed to the advanced age of the event, which was 1908. So it had happened way too long ago. But discredited or not, deaths continued to pile up in the Nahanni Valley. In 1945, a miner from Ontario, whose name is now lost, was found dead, still in a sleeping bag. His head, however, was never found. Around that time, another trapper succumbed to the inhospitable wilderness. He was John O'Brien, and he was found frozen next to his campfire. His rigid hands was still clutching a match. His death was clearly due to freezing. So the reason why the John O'Brien death was really strange is because he was another prospector. He was out there with a friend, actually, and they had a cabin. So what happened was, is they had set traps all around the Nahanni Valley, and he told his friend, he's like, hey, I'm going to go check all the traps, and then I'll be back. I'll be back in 9 days. So it was so cold in the Nahanni Valley, if he knew that if he found animals in his traps, that they wouldn't spoil by the time that he got back. Like, it was so cold.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, he set out, and he was gone for a really long time. So he was gone for the full 9 days, but he shouldn't have been gone that long. So when his friend went to go look for him, he had found him like a mile and a half away upriver. And what was really strange about his death is that his eyes were open, he had a match in his hand, and he was in front of his campfire, and he was just sitting there looking at the fire. It's described as like he almost... like flash froze, like in The Day After Tomorrow, where that wind like brings down the ice, the mm-hmm. icy wind, and everything like freezes on the spot,
like the American flag that like is waving frozen. And it just freezes.
That is how exactly how he was described to have been frozen. What, like flash fuck? Frozen solid.
So does it get that cold though? Like, is that,
I don't know. I don't, I think, I mean, this is Upper Canada, so probably. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't doubt that since it's a valley, there's like a gust of wind that brings in concentrated cold air. But I'm not a scientist. It is true. In the winter, the Nahali Valley really is inhospitable. With the freezing cold and the ravaging timber wolves, this nature can claim the lives of the most experienced outdoorsmen. But in the warmer months, this valley transformed into a truly unique environment. So much so that many dub it tropical. It can turn into a true oasis, being warm and lush with vegetation. One can even bathe in the creeks and streams, fearing no coldness. And that's all due to the hot sulfur springs that can be found here. Hot springs lie all beneath the valley and give it an additional dose of mystery. The sulfur can often fill the air with an odd smell. And more than that, the combination of the hot sulfury air and the cooler Arctic air above create really thick and mysterious mist that cover over the entire Nahali Valley very frequently, giving the area almost like an otherworldly ambience. Mm-hmm. This gave rise to tales of a mysterious tropical valley that exists somewhere within the huge Nahali Valley. While there is a chance that the clash of hot sulfuric air and the cold Arctic climate can create a unique environment, a tropical valley still seems far-fetched. So this is another myth, that there's like the secret valley, secret oasis, like it's like tropical, there's like rainforest trees and rainforest animals and things like that. Nevertheless, legends just keep mounting up. Scientists, those few that ever set foot in the valley, discovered numerous remains of prehistoric animals, chiefly bones of mastodons, ancient bear dogs, and etc. To that end, many have said that these animals still live within the deepest, most remote nooks of the Nahani. Tales exist of trappers seeing fresh tracks of prehistoric mammals and bringing back huge ivory tusks with flesh and hair still visible on them. Other tales state that many of the Diné tribe elders living in the area were able to very accurately and very well draw pictures of mastodons as if from memory. Another prevalent story tells of the prehistoric bear dogs that still roam the valley today by native people. Mm-hmm. In the end, no one can accurately say what is happening within the mysterious Nahali Valley. Up to 44 persons have either died or disappeared within its starting from 1908, and that is an eerily high number just for one valley. Plenty of odd facts contribute to the prevalent sense of enigma here. The indigenous Diné locals have avoided the valley for centuries, claiming that it is haunted by evil. Others state that Nahali Valley is the entrance to the so-called Hollow Earth. True, the valley is dotted with subterranean caverns, some 250 of them, and many remain unexplored. However, we are quite sure the Earth's belly is rather hot, more than hollow. This was a direct quote from the article. It was pretty good.
Wow.
Very cute. Another thing that I want to note, is that I don't know if you remember when I was telling you before that like there's several valleys that you travel through. Some are easier to like move up to the sides and some are not. Mm-hmm. There's a specific one, either the second or the third valley, that you can't get up to the sides because it's just like sheer walls of mountain next to you. It's like cliffs, right?
Yeah.
But when you look further up, there's holes. There's caves in the side, like hundreds of holes. Like caves everywhere. And it is said that if you canoe through that part of the valley, you feel like somebody's watching you. But when you look up and try to look at the caves to see who's looking at you, the caves are completely dark, so you can't see in them. So you don't know who actually is looking at you. But it's a very creepy feeling that people get when they go canoeing through that valley.
So what happened to that lady that was climbing the cliffs?
She was lost. Never found
again.
Never found again.
Oh my God.
Her naked ass is still out there climbing mountains.
Miley Cyrus.
Yeah. And actually, I found the most recent reports of death was on June 12th, 2005. David Horsey, 60 years old, and Frederick Hardestay, they went to Rod Gunderson's cabin, 77 miles northwest of Fort Simpson. They were both very experienced men in the wilderness. One of them was found floating in a river, dead. They were only gone for 3 days. The other one was found burned. Yeah. So still 2005, weird things are still happening in the Nahanni Valley.
I don't know if you would know, but did they ever find a cause of death for the man that was found in the river?
No. They say that he died from hypothermia. And the other one died from burning to death.
What the fuck? I want to know. I hate unsolved mysteries. I want to know. Like, I want a response. I want an answer.
Also, what's very interesting about this is that they were found 2.3 miles away from their cabin that they were originally in. The cabin was still standing there. It wasn't burned or anything. But these men were found in areas that had already been searched by search teams.
Oh, my God.
So it was like they were placed after the fact that people had left. So, and that was the story of the Nahanni Valley. What'd you think?
Wow. Honestly, I feel like I didn't know anything.
Well, now you know.
Now I know. That's insane.
I think it's kind of cool how there's like still a lot of stories of like mastodons and things out there. Mm-hmm. So woolly mammoths. There's still like woolly mammoths out there. And supposedly First Nations people tell stories of woolly mammoths like recently as of like 600 years ago. Like that they still exist.
Yeah.
So
I believe them.
Interesting.
Oh, wow. Well, thanks. Good job on your case. That was really good.
Thank you. Ow.
Do you have anything to say before we end the episode?
No, I hope everybody has a good Valentine's Day.
Okay. I hope everyone had a good year. Or like, oh shit, sorry. A good start to the year.
Yeah.
Even if sometimes it feels like this is not that, like, there's not a lot of good stuff happening. It's just January. We still got a whole 11 months left.
Oh, God. That did not make me feel any better.
It should.
Oh, I'll be positive.
Okay.
Well, we're going to see Trixie and Katya soon. So, yeah, let's be positive.
We're going to be in Dallas next month.
Hey, catch us in Dallas.
Thanks to everyone that has been really supportive. I know we're not as active on social media as we probably should be.
But we're both working a lot.
Yes, right now. Especially recently. Oh my God.
It's start of the year. Year end, really, start of the year.
But we really want to thank everyone who still like sends us their stories. Who's not mad at me because I tried a Puerto Rican accent that one time.
Oh my God.
Or who's not mad at me because I said that I feel overwhelmed when people send me their birthday wishes. I just get easily overwhelmed. I'm like a little chihuahua.
Damn.
But thanks to everyone who still stuck got out with me.
And you know what? A lot of people sent us messages about your Puerto Rican accent.
They did. They're like, if I see you, it's on site. Yeah. They're like, hi, this is the official
I'm not listening to your podcast anymore.
Yeah, they're like, this is the official Instagram in Puerto Rico. You are legally no longer allowed to enter into the territory. God. I'm like, oh.
You did that. All in the span of 5 minutes.
I ruined it.
You did. Well, thanks for listening. Please follow us on Instagram at Get Spooky Podcast and on Twitter at Get Spooky Pod. Also, email us any story suggestions or your own scary stories at getspookypodcast@gmail.com. Special thanks to Taylor Turner for the artwork and Kyle Fields for the intro music. Don't forget to tell someone you love how much they mean to you. Bye-bye.
Yeah. And in all seriousness, thanks again for like the support that everyone gives us.
Yeah. We love you guys.
Bye.
Bye, primos and primas.